Peace and welcome back to For the Culture. Right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely. The voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me, folks. We're talking about how the Texas Board of Education had decided to take it on their own and eliminate certain historical figures from their history and social studies curriculum. It's a recommendation at this point, but it will be voted on in November. The final vote will take place in November. Some of those individuals are Hillary Clinton, Helen Keller, Billy Graham, Barry Goldwater. And apparently, people just don't want to talk about them in Texas. Really? This is not laughing. I'm not laughing at the situation. I'm really just like, when you think about where we are as a country, the greatest medicine that I think this country needs right now, because this country is sick, this country needs some real healing. The greatest medicine that this country needs right now is truth. It's truth. It makes me think of back, and I was talking to my my producer Alex about this. You know, when the whole situation, and this is not relating to this, but it just, I'm going to break it down to you, hopefully, very clearly, so you can see the relevance of this. But, like, when we heard that Paul Manafort, the former Trump campaign manager, decided he was going to work with the Mueller investigation against President Trump, that he was going to cooperate with the investigation. And the White House put out a statement saying that his willingness to work with Mueller has nothing to do with the president. Really? Here's a guy that was his former campaign manager during the times when the time in question about the whole piece of colluding with Russians. Here's a man that is been well known. Paul Manafort has known to be connected and having relationship with Russians, all of that. And then to still put out the statement from the White House to lie and say, he's cooperating. He's flipping, essentially. He's flipping because just a month ago, his lawyers had was on video saying, no, he will never cooperate. He will never be a part of the Mueller investigation. 30 days later, yes, he's cooperating. But the White House being in a state of denial about what's really going on. The same situation we're seeing with Supreme Court nominee with Mr. Kavanaugh. The White House being in a state of denial, saying that the woman that's accused him of sexual misconduct and all of those things that, you know, the White House put out a statement based upon Ms. April Ryan saying that, look, hey, we will move forward with the process and allow Mr. Kavanaugh to clear his name. Denial. And this is the culture, right? This is the cultural psychology that I'm speaking about, that when you keep on denying what's the inevitable, you're going to feel the wrath and the consequences of that truth. Because the truth is going to come to light, right? That's what we all have been taught, and that's what we all understand. The truth comes to light. And in this country, at this particular time, it's not going to come to light 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years down the road. It's going to come to light in a couple of days, a couple of months, right? And so, you know, if we are wrapped up in the cultural psychology of denial, if we are wrapped up in the cultural psychology of lying, if we are wrapped up in the cultural psychology of not allowing truth to come to light or to try to dismiss the facts, then we are essentially saying that we are essentially worthy of the consequences. Right? Because we haven't listened to truth. Let's go to Mark from East Baltimore. Mark, thank you for your great patience, sir. What's your take on this whole situation in Texas?
Well, my whole thing is this. Why do you go to your colonizer to get the truth? You're never going to get it. I mean, it's funny. You know, several years back, I worked with a gentleman who's a very prominent Native American, and he basically told me, man, you don't know what freedom is. You can't walk out your house and walk across your neighbor's yard. He basically was saying, you know, this country was stolen, and it's stolen through genocide. Mm-hmm. You go back and look at what Native Americans went through. I mean, they were here 8 million strong and got wiped out.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, you expect to get a fair shake from the people who wiped out a whole nation of people that were indigenous people that were here because they wanted the land. Sorry, ain't going to happen on this watch. I mean, what we need to do, like the gentleman said before, is you know, as a people. But you got to decide what kind of people you're going to be, because we're basically in America people without a country. You're going to have to develop institutions. This is our culture. This is our language. Those are the things. These are the things that define a country. So, I mean, yeah, I understand that America is our country. We need to start focusing on being our country and not assimilating into their country.
Well, here's the thing, though, Mark. Here's the thing, though, and I hear you loud and clear. The thing is, and I think that we should go back to what D. Chase mentioned just a few moments ago, talking about those who see themselves as a people. See, you're talking from the space and from the context that all black people see themselves as a people.
We should.
Certainly. Right? We should.
That's what we don't.
See, that's what I'm saying. We're not coming from that same that you got to remember, like with the 40 to 50 million black people in this country, all of us are not coming from that space. They're not coming from that context. Oh, I'm part of a great people. You know, we had on here a few months ago on the 3rd of July, we had the author, Ms. Robin DiAngelo, who wrote the book White Fragility. And one of the things that Robin says is that white people, and this is not racism, folks. She says she's a white woman saying this, but she made the point that white people don't see themselves as a community, quote unquote. They see themselves as individuals. Mm-hmm. So the only group of white people that we often hear as saying the white community, guess who we often hear that from? White nationalists. You don't hear the white person that's not a part of that particular school of thought refer to white people as a white community. You just don't hear that. They don't see themselves as part of the community. So my point is that has spilled over into our people, that our people don't see ourselves. Yes, you have callers and folks that, and all of you who tune in to me or Dr. K, and you say, our people, our people, our people. But guess what? If you've been indoctrinated, if you've been taught and you've been raised and conditioned to think that, guess what? You're no longer a people. It's about the individual. That's one of the cultural barriers that we always work up against. You got to get black people to see themselves as part of something bigger than themselves.
Agreed. I agree 100% with you, man. We do. And until that happens, hey, divide and conquer, you know.
Well, yeah. Family, I mean, that's going to happen.
Right. The family is the strongest unit we have. We start with the family. Then we can build the communities. And then we can start building, getting zip codes. But as long as that family is fractured, man, I mean, you know, we're going to always have, you know, problems.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mark, I appreciate you, man. You are absolutely right. Checking in from East Baltimore. Thank you so much. Tremaine, talk to me. What's your take on this? Tremaine? Oh, okay. We're going to get to Tremaine in one quick moment. But yeah, folks, I mean, we have to think of it from the context of we're not all in that space of seeing each other as people. All right, let's go to Tremaine now. Tremaine, thank you so much for checking in. What's your take on this?
Oh, man, I really didn't know I was going to get on this quickly.
It's your day, Tremaine. You're winning.
I was listening to your previous caller.
Yeah.
And I had listened to your other shows. And every show that I've listened to comes back for me to the lack of leadership that we have as a people. Mm. I don't know. I know the pieces, but I don't know what they're doing. I don't see anything that they're doing actively for people at the grassroots level. You know, who can you tell me who our leadership is?
Well, you know what? I mean, and here's the the question really becomes, is like, we could always say, of course we could say the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. We could say a Jesse Jackson.
No, no.
We could say a Reverend Al Sharpton, depending on who you're talking to. Let me just say, depending on who you're talking to, right? You could say, some people say Cornel West. Some people would say, you know, Hakeem Mahabudi. Some people, depending on who you're talking to, that's, you may get, you're going to have different names, different voices.
Okay, so can I jump in?
Sure.
You know, I know things are short,
yeah,
but I disagree with you.
Okay.
I cannot say that because you know who your leader is. You don't have to, it doesn't depend on who you talk to or what they say, because they're out front and they're leading, they're dictating, they're showing you, you know, as a group, as whatever group that is, you know what, this is what we're doing. This is our motive. This is how we're acting. This is what we're doing with our money. This is how what we're doing with our children. We're instituting this program. We're pushing for this. You know, politics, you know what? We got the vote pushing over here. Finances, this is what we're saying we should do. Community-wise, you know, we don't have that. Now, if you can show me where it is on a national scale, then I will call them up and say, how can I get involved? But we don't have that. There was a grassroots movement at one time, and you know how long ago that was. We lost that leader. They took him away from us, and here we are.
I don't think we're in a leaderless movement as much, though, Tremaine. I really don't. I think that we are in a movement where we've decided to not listen to those who have been standing in front of us for many years. And we decided, oh, at some point along the way, we were like, oh, well, that's not relevant. They're not, their leadership is not enough, is not sufficient, right? I mean, because if you look at the history, we've been talking about history today. If you looked at the history of black leadership in this country, I don't know any other people that have had more people, more individuals who have stood before the group, their people, more so than black people. I mean, you going down the line from today all the way back to 50 years ago, let alone 100 years ago, we've had dynamic men and women standing in front of us, striving to lead us in a certain direction.
Most definitely, yes, I agree.
And what has happened? We have decided as a people, right? And part of it is because of our own accord, and other part of it is because through propaganda, miseducation, through misdirection, and all of the other strategies of those who don't want to see black people and oppressed people in this country getting to a certain space, they use those strategies to keep us disconnected. To keep us disconnected from ourselves as well as disconnected from that leader.
But Faraji, I also believe that those people that you talked about that were dynamic, I believe there were things that happened to them that could have very well stopped them from doing whatever.
Sure.
They overcame that.
Mm-hmm.
There was something about those people that said, I don't care what the people say.
Yeah.
I know that they need leadership, and I'm gonna be that.
You know what that was? And okay, I'm going to just give you my humble opinion, though, Tremaine. I might be way off on this, but I'm going to give you my humble opinion. I think that those individuals who persist in the face of rejection by black people, they persist because of a genuine love for black people. That's it.
Oh, so you saying that I'm not even going to go there.
I mean, seriously, because guess what? And I've heard the minister say this one a few times. He's like, you got to love black people in order to serve them. Otherwise,
yes.
And I'm not talking about 50 years. Try for 5 years. Like, seriously. Like, for real. For 5 years. Be like, I'm going to dedicate my life to serving black folks or to serving the oppressed in this country for 5 years. For 5 years. And try to see how far you get, how your heart becomes weary. And your
I believe we're definitely in a different era.
Yeah, we are.
And it takes a and you know, if I had it, and I just don't believe I had it.
Yeah.
I have it. I don't have what I would consider the resources, even the level of education. I may have the commitment, but I there are certain things that won't allow me to be there. But there are people I know who can't say that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And so I would love for them to step up so I can support them in the face of all of the other Negroes who feel that it's, you know, like you said earlier, whatever they're doing is not enough.
Right. Real quick, Tremaine.
We're getting beat down again. We're getting beat up.
Well, and here's the thing. Are you a politics man, Tremaine? Do you follow politics nationally?
I follow politics, but not very closely.
Not very close. Okay. I'm not asking you to do it like super close, but you know, like for this past weekend, there was the Congressional Black Caucus weekend. Everybody, you know, we're kind of talking. I'm not going to say everybody. I'm just saying some of your major black leaders, political leadership, was there at the CBC weekend, right?
Right.
And so, you know, and I shared this with my producer. I said, we have to, as a people, stop making political leadership like it's entertainment. Because, you know, we have a Senator Kamala Harris out of California, or Senator Cory Booker, who were the headliners, quote unquote. That's what they call them, the headliners of CBC weekend. But this is not entertainment. And until we as a constituency get out of that cultural psychology of seeing politics as a form of entertainment, like, oh, it's Kamala Harris. No, that is a servant of the people. Senator Cory Booker represents a group of people. As much as they are a voice, articulate, bright, intelligent voices, but at the end of the day, they're servants, not entertainers.
That's true.
So that's all I'm saying. I just want us to kind of, you know, when you talked about that level of leadership, you know what I'm saying? You're probably going to hear more and more about them, right? But the condition that is facing not just black people in this country, white people, Latino people, and all people in this country, we don't need no more entertainers. We need servants of people that are going to lead.
That's true. And I believe true leaders know that.
Absolutely.
I believe true leaders know what it is that they are really doing, so that when it gets to the point where you're in the face of black people and it's hard to you know, for black people to follow you or to lead, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't. Who cares? Because I know there's something that needs to be done. I'm going to step up and do it. If I got 20 people following me, I'm going to do it.
There it is.
If I got a million people following me, I'm going to do it. That was my point.
Hey, Tremaine, I appreciate the conversation, brother, but I think you bring up a valid point, and folks are checking in to kind of continue to build on that. Let's go to Damon out of Cockeysville, agreeing that we don't have strong leadership. Damon, talk to me, sir. What's your take?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I think we do not have clear or strong leaders because we are not strong followers. When you look at your Dr. Martin Luther King, your Al Sharpton's, Jesse Jackson, Louis Farrakhan, a lot of the older and established leaders, they had people that were willing to lose their life.
Some
to
still do.
Follow them,
yep,
for the betterment of our people. How desperate are we for change as a people? Are we willing to lose our lives? Are we willing to lose our jobs? Are we willing to lose as self for a greater gain for our people? I don't think we're good followers.
Damon, why are you opening up Pandora's box this evening, brother? My goodness. Being a good follower. I just wrote that. Being a strong and good follower. My goodness. Can we stop you right there, Damon? Damon from Cockeysville, thank you so much for checking. I got to stop you right there because I want us to marinate on that one. Let's just let that simmer a little bit. We're going to just turn the oven up just a tad bit. Turn the stove up just a little bit. Man, being a strong follower. Let's go to David out of West Baltimore. David, what's your take on this? Being a strong follower. We're talking about leadership. We're talking about what's happening in Texas. What's your take? Hey, David?
Yeah.
Okay, you with us? I'm good. I'm good. Talk to me, David.
Yeah, I have a little issue with the leader business.
Okay, what's your issue?
Because a lot of people, they as what's the name? The last caller.
Mm-hmm.
When he said you have to be a good follower. It is very important because a lot of people like to push people in the forefront and they just put all the burden on them. We depend on leaders too much and we don't do anything. We just put someone out there and just leave them out there to the wolves. So I don't like this black leader, because to me it's like black people are the only people who always have a leader. Nobody will have leaders. Only
well, that's
black
not
people.
True. That's not true, David. That's not true. And
well,
and we see
true.
It.
I may say the right way, but what I'm trying to say is that we depend on someone, always dependent on someone else to
well,
do
I think,
what we should do.
And I hear you loud and clear. I think that what I think the conversation, and I appreciate you for checking in, David. I think the conversation is about having a collective vision. Not necessarily that one man or one woman is going to save millions of people, but a collective vision can get us in the best place. And I mean, if you look at it, right, and I understand what you're saying, well, we don't need leaders, but you do need a guide. I'm wholeheartedly in agreement that we need a guide to get through all of the jungle of this concrete jungle called America, to get through, a guide to help us get through the policies, a guide to help us get through the economic challenges, a guide to help us get through the educational challenges. We need somebody, and it's not it may not just be one person. It could be a group of people. It could be many people, but there have to be some who have decided, a few, to come out of the many to guide us to get through these things in a way where we don't continue to lose ourselves, or certainly we don't lose generations of people. Just in dealing with the Texas issue, how can we guide ourselves through a system like that, where they're talking about removing certain elements of history because they personally don't agree with it? How do you handle that? First, from a legislative point of view, but most importantly, from an historical, cultural point of view, how do you handle yourself through that? So I don't think that having a conversation about leadership is moot. And let's be honest, this country is built upon leadership. Political leadership, that's what we're seeing. People look to President Donald Trump. You may not look to him, and I may not look to him, but there are people that look to him as a leader. And we call him just that, leader of the free world. So leadership is not something that I don't think that is irrelevant here. Let's go to Terrence out of West Baltimore. Terrence, what's your take, man?
What's going on, Faraj? How you doing?
I'm good, Terrence. How are you?
I'm good. Doing good as always. I just wanted to say that I think the notion of black leadership as people have historically known it is a little outdated.
Yeah.
I think we're dealing with a situation today where we have a lot of different movements going on.
Yeah.
And we have leaders within those movements. But, you know, back in the day, the primary issue was civil rights. So everybody gravitated to that, and what two or three people were making moves in that space. But today, I mean, you have, you know, criminal justice leaders out there. You got people in the black tech movement out there. You got people in the black financial movement out there. There's multiple movements going on at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think our leadership is a little bit more spread out than it has been in years past. And that's why people may not be able to identify, you know, a specific leader or a specific group of leaders in the current environment that we live in.
And you know what, Terrence, what comes to my mind? The civil rights movement. And I remember having conversations about this situation when the civil rights movement was at its peak or even growing in momentum, right? You had stuff mm-hmm. that was popping off in Chicago, but then you also had stuff that was happening in Alabama, right?
Right.
And the power of that was that things were happening. Now, they may not have known everything that was happening, right? You know, I mean, the leadership in Chicago may not have communicated to the leadership in Alabama, but what made the civil rights movement so powerful is that the action was done, and there that the larger the overriding goal was about civil rights.
Right.
And I don't think you necessarily have to know what each and every person is doing. I just think you need to know that somebody is doing something.
Right. And even like, you know, back in, I think it was like 1964, Malcolm X said, it's not the national leaders that are going to get things done. It's your local grassroots.
There it is. There it is, Terrence.
And I think that, you know, the way technology is, you know, it ties everybody together now. And so you don't have to have, like, you know, back in the day, Dr. King physically had to go to Detroit to work, you know, on the housing situation there. And then, you know, he had to move throughout the South. You don't have to do that now because you can connect with people in New York, Chicago, Mississippi,
yep,
South Carolina, where you are, where all these different movements are going on. So it doesn't have to be one set group of people moving from place to place. Everybody can do what they're going to do in their pocket and still connect the world to their particular movement.
That's a great point. Excellent point. Terrence, my man from West Baltimore, thank you so much for checking in, and I truly appreciate it. Really quick, before we take our last break for the night, Antoinette checked in on our Facebook page, on the Fuller Culture Facebook page, as we've been talking about education. She said, and we wonder why our children have no sense of pride, don't value their right to free education. We wonder why they would rather steal, kill, and destroy. We wonder why they do not understand their connection to their ancestors. It is because they were never taught. Oh, well, if you are only vaguely informed of your history once a year in school and you are taught about the same famous black people every February, no disrespect to MLK, Martin, Malcolm X, Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, but the real black history cannot be taught in 28 days once a year, especially when black families do not regularly discuss real black history. We can't afford to allow the wrong people to dictate what is in our textbooks. Black people, can we please be on one accord on this? I made it my business to retake U.S. History 1 and 2 at CCBC just so as a refresher. I must admit, I was thoroughly impressed with the inclusion of the truth about the transatlantic slave trade and the ultimate sacrifices that African slaves did to build this country. The instructor was European, white, and she was unapologetically truthful about the transatlantic slave trade and where black people are today with regard to race relations. She empowered our diverse classroom to speak freely, and boy, did we. And you sure did, Antoinette. I definitely, definitely agree with that. Look, we got to take our quick final pause tonight. When we come back, y'all got me open right now. But when we come back, we'll have a conversation with Mr. Byron Nix and talk about what is happening in the world of the NFL. So stay riding with us. Whole lot coming up in the final 30 of For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community. I do this for my culture. Peace and welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in with us and riding with us for this final 30 of the show. And of course, we're going to switch gears a little bit because we got to switch gears. I had to talk about this upcoming story because there was it kind of really surprised me. I never heard this situation happening. But when I read the story, I was like, man, this must be something much, much deeper. And so I had to have some conversations about this. And joining us in this conversation about what cornerback Mr. Vontae Davis is Byron Nixon, who is a media personality himself and has done and really like a cultural critic Also joining us is one of our very own here from WEAA, Mr. Dre Day, Mr. Andre Melton from the Flex Zone. And we thank him for giving us some insight about this as well. So let's start with you first. Byron, thank you so much for being back on the program. Always good to have you.
Likewise, Faraji. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Let's start with you, Mr. Dre Day. So here's the situation. So here's a man who played a game. He played the first game of the season. I mean, the Bills, Buffalo Bills, they lost terribly to the Ravens, right? I think yesterday was probably one of the – was like a sad day for a lot of teams, right? There's a lot of upsets yesterday. We're not going to talk about it. but last week, he lost terribly to the Ravens, 47-3. The Bills go into their next game against the Los Angeles Chargers. They start to lose. They essentially lost that game. But Vontae Davis, cornerback for the Bills, he abruptly retires at halftime, saying in a statement that he shouldn't be out there anymore. That reality hit him during halftime. I'm trying to understand, Dre Day, what is this about? Is this really about the game, or is this about a man who's just saying self-love, or he's being a sore loser? I mean, what? He has a 10-year veteran of the game.
He's literally a quitter at this point. I mean, I've never seen anybody quit.
Like, no, he didn't just quit. He retired.
At halftime.
At halftime.
Honestly, I'm still perplexed by this whole situation.
Right.
I've heard of people quit during training camp, at the end of the game. You know, I've heard plenty of retirement stories, but never during halftime. I mean,
what?
So you're saying he's a quitter?
Yes, hands down. I mean, he can never go into another NFL locker room ever again. He can't go back.
Well, he's not planning to.
I mean, even if he wanted to, in some magical epiphany that he had, and he wants to come back, he could never go back to that Bills locker room or any locker room in the NFL because they will always view him as a quitter.
Byron Nixon, let's get your take on this. Vontae Davis, according to the Bills coach, Sean McDermott, he said he pulled himself out the game. He communicated to us that he was done. And then the linebacker, Lorenzo Alexander, his teammate, was not happy at all. He said, never have seen it ever. Pop Warner, high school. My man went down the line. Pop Warner, high school, college, and pros. Never heard of it, never seen it, and is just completely disrespectful to his teammates. He didn't say nothing to nobody. I found out going into the second half of the game, they said he's not coming out. He's retired. That's it. Let's talk about it, Byron. What are we to make of this?
Well, first and foremost, if I was on that Bills roster too, I would quit midway through. They're looking at the worst team in the league, maybe even worse than the Cleveland Browns last year. And let's not forget, they didn't even win a game.
Don't forget
the worst coach out there too.
Byron, did you say if you were on the Bills, if you were part of the Bills locker room, you would quit in halftime?
Shoot, you look around at that roster, you might as well pull fans out the stands. It's so bad out there. Man, I feel sad.
All right, so. All right, outside of their playing right now, is it just the fact that – do you think that if Vontae was a part of a different team, that he would have made the same decision if he was a part of the Patriots, if he was part of the Packers? Hell, if he was a part of the Ravens, would he have made the same decision?
I think he would have gave him at least the common courtesy of finishing out the game, like Dre said, to not even finish out the second half, just to leave mid-game, not even concerned about the rest of his teammates, not even clean out your locker. The decency to do that, I mean, it should tell you a lot about this guy. He has had some issues in the past, and seeing this happen and take fruition in the middle of a game, you got to be known as a quitter, like Dre said, sadly. And this guy can't play in the NFL again. He ain't got no choice but to retire.
He's got no choice. He said in his statement that he put out, Dre and Byron, quote, "This isn't how I pictured retiring from the NFL." This is the part that gets me. It's not like somebody compelled you or forced you and said, "Hey, Vontae, man, you need to retire." You made the decision on your own. But his first line of his statement was, "This isn't how I pictured retiring from the NFL." I'm like, then why did you make the decision, like, to do it that way? Oh, okay. Anyway, he says, "But in my 10th NFL season, I have been doing what my body has been programmed to do. get ready to play on game day. I've endured multiple surgeries and played through many different injuries throughout my career. And over the last few weeks, this was the latest physical challenge. But today on the field, reality hit me fast and hard. I shouldn't be out there anymore. I meant no disrespect to my teammates and coaches, but I hold myself to a standard. Mentally, I always expect myself to play at a high level. But physically, I know today that isn't possible. I had an honest moment with myself while I was on the field. I just didn't feel right, and I told the coaches, I'm not feeling like myself. I also wondered, do I want to keep sacrificing? And truthfully, I do not, because the season is long, and it's more important for me and my family to walk away healthy than to willfully embrace the warrior mentality and limp away too soon. This was an overwhelming decision, but I'm at peace with myself and my family. I choose to be grateful to God for allowing me to play the game that I have loved as a boy until I turned 30 years old. I choose to be grateful to God for being a part of the NFL and making lifelong friends over the last decade. There were roadblocks and pitfalls along the way, but I'm grateful to God for all of it because He doesn't promise any of us an easy journey. Lastly, I am grateful to God for what He has in store for me ahead in this next chapter of my life. So he seems to have some, Dre, he seems to be sensitive to the fact of how this is going to be seen, right? He recognized it. He's saying no disrespect to his teammates and coaches, but he's also a man that has been in great turmoil, you know, emotionally and mentally and whatnot. And we're starting to see a lot more players that are getting to this space where they're saying, you know what? The NFL is not all that it's cracked up to be once they get to a certain point in their career, right? He's 10 years in. I've seen players quit after the first year. So what do we take from that? I mean, right, okay, he quit, but the game itself will do a lot to you. The lifestyle, the training, the playing, the injuries, the whole nine. How do we find some sort of reconciliation given all of that?
Man, I'm still perplexed. Just quit. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this whole situation because you went through the hardest part of playing in the NFL, which is going through the whole training camp situation, trying to get your body right for the season. You played a game, a game and a half, and then you just decide, okay, I don't want to do this anymore.
But this is 10 years in, though. He might have been feeling this way for the past couple of years.
He may have, but at least have the common courtesy to finish the game. After the game, I think people could have been more acceptable of his decision to walk away from it.
Yeah.
But not halfway through the game.
Yeah.
Because I don't know any place that's ever going to view him as a I don't know if he can be a commentator. I don't know if he can. I don't even know if he could coach Little League football because people are just always going to view him. The first thing is always to their mind is you quit. You walked out on your team, and that's the worst thing that you could do is be. You're not a warrior. You're a walkout.
Wow. You said you can't even coach Little League. All right. Let's go to the phone line. See what folks got to say. 410-319-8888. We're talking about Buffalo Bills cornerback Vontae Davis, how he abruptly retires at halftime in yesterday's game. Let's hear what Mr. P from Pikesville's got to say. Mr. P, talk to me. What you got to say, sir?
That's his choice.
That's his choice?
You know, I mean, you can't wrap your head around and you can't figure it out. He got 10 years in.
Right.
So on that field yesterday, he probably had an epiphany or something, and he saw his life on down the road with his family. You know, and thank God he did not go in the locker room, pull out a gun, and shoot himself.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So, and I'm not saying to come down on the other players that had that CTE thing and they killed themselves, but that's his choice.
Do you think CTE, do you think that, you know, I mean, he talks about it in his statement that that he didn't want to limp away. He didn't want to willfully embrace the warrior mentality and limp away too late.
That's, That's read in between that, Faraji.
Yeah.
That's his message.
Yeah.
That's his message that, hey, I still got my health. I still got my thinking, my actions, everything. And, you know, if he never coached a little league, that's his choice.
That's
and
his choice.
He will coach a little league. Somebody out there is going to grab him and say, hey, I heard your story a year or so ago on the radio. Come and coach this little league team in this country, I mean, in this town or whatever, and show these kids how it is.
In a very small town?
Okay, so what?
Here's the other thing, Mr. B.
But that's his choice.
But
it was his choice, but it was also his choice because, I mean, from this day forward, he will always be viewed as a quitter. You're right. He had a choice,
No.
His choice was he looks like he quit on his team.
You and the media is going to call him a quitter.
Is he not?
No, man.
Then what is he?
No, he ain't no quitter.
What is he then?
It's his choice.
I'm aware it was his choice, but I'm asking you, what will he be viewed as?
Right. Yes, okay. He quit in the middle of the game. But that's his choice.
No, but sir, what? Okay, it was his choice, but what do you view him as?
View him as no quitter.
Then what do you view him as then?
I view him as a person that made a decision.
A decision to quit?
He made the decision after the game. But he probably said enough is enough.
Well, you know
what they call that at MMA? He tapped out.
He tapped out.
He quit. He had enough. He walked away.
Hey, you know what? Okay, Mr. P, I appreciate you for checking in from Pikesville, man. Oh, man. Folks are checking in now. I want to hear from, and Byron, I'm going to get right back to you. I want to hear what Cheryl from Northeast Baltimore got to say. Cheryl, talk to me. What's your take on this?
I view him as a very wise man who decided to take a mental health day. You said he went to his coaches.
So right? You see it as a form of self-care.
Self-care. He recognized the fact that was enough, and I can't do it anymore.
So here's my question, Cheryl, and trust me, I'm a huge advocate of self-care. But here's my question. Why not do that before the game started? Because you depend on, I mean, he is a veteran. He's a Pro Bowler. You depend on his production in the course of a game. You depend on him to contribute to winning that game. So why not do that before the game or even after the game or for the sake of your team?
And maybe that was his thought process. I'm going to try to make it through.
Yeah.
And at halftime, he couldn't. So let me go now. He could have hurt himself or anyone else. He's very wise to make that choice.
Cheryl from Northeast Baltimore.
Day, all day long, and I think a lot of us need to recognize it. If you don't feel good, don't go to work.
But you know what, Cheryl? That's not. I don't know if that's the reality that we live in. You know what I'm saying? Because how many of us? Some people will take that don't feel good and just run a whole football field with it, right? You never see them at work. I mean, you're not always going to be your best, right, Byron? You're not going to always be at your best every single day. Something can happen. Hell, I mean, you could literally walk in to your job and something can just take your mind and cause you to think, you know, cause you to not be on your game. But does that mean you, before you open that door, you know what? This situation is kind of heavy. I think I'm going to just call out. I mean, I don't know.
Mindset for Roger, we would all walk out every day.
Exactly.
We can't do that.
No, I'm seriously. Real talk. So I don't know, and I respect Cheryl for her opinion because I think that she's right. But I'm looking at the situation and saying, well, is that something that you do right then and there? Timing has a lot to do with self care, especially when you got people dependent on you. Let's go back to the line. We got who is this? Buddy for West Baltimore. Buddy, what's your take on this?
Hey, look, it's a whole lot of athletes that been quit. Durant said no muss. De La Hoya quit when the boy hit him in the liver. Junior Seau suicide himself.
Yeah.
He was a football player.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a seriously look at this, man. It's just sometimes, like, this thing ain't no joke sometimes.
No, it's not.
You're looking at all the people and most of the NFL players, this concussion thing's been going on. And Barry Sanders, my hero, he walked away. He could have been all-time running back with a sorry team, but he didn't quit. But he retired. it's a lot. It's not just this person right now. And when we get new news, it's old news to me because a whole lot of people done quit.
That's true. That is so true. Buddy from West Baltimore, thank you so much for checking in. Let's go to Don from West Baltimore. Don, what's your take on this? You think he's a quitter or he's just doing it for self-love?
Okay, in the real form, he quit a situation that could have brought him harm, was bringing him harm. Mm. So he got out of it, and that's wise, to be able to recognize that this is bringing you harm, mental harm, physical harm, spiritual harm. So why put up a show? Why put up a front?
Yeah.
Why you know, you go out there and, you know, he's get on the center and something comes over him and he missed the play and gets somebody hurt.
Mm.
You know, I applaud the man that he realized that he could no longer do this and do it like it should be done, step down. Like, take a pilot flying a plane. And all of a sudden, something happens to him, and he can't fly that plane anymore. He doesn't feel comfortable. He turns it over to whom?
Mm.
To the co-pilot.
Right.
So that he does not cause harm to anyone else. The man's smart, and we have to be smart also. And listening to your panelists, they're thinking it like it's a game. I just saw a thing on television last night on 60 Minutes talking about the CTE thing.
Yeah.
And it is bad.
You're right. You're right, Don.
And if the sooner you come to your senses, that getting whacked up playing football for people who don't give a good, you know what the rest of the word is,
yeah,
about you and your people and your culture, then why should you give all of that concern about them?
All right. Hey, Don from West Baltimore, appreciate you for checking in.
Wait a minute. Is this man not getting paid millions of dollars? So should he, what was he going to get paid for half a game? Like, I'm trying to understand.
He's going to have to give some of that money back. Buffalo going to come for that money. They don't care about that. They want some of that money back because they're already bad enough as it is. They might as well recoup some money.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I can't go up to WEAA and then demand a whole day's paycheck. Like, come on. Now, what are we really saying here?
Well, that's it. Well, one, that sports fans are unforgiving. That's one. But two, I think people are looking at the mental health side of playing football, and they're saying, look, he made a decision that was in his best interest.
I mean, I'm really honestly baffled by this. It doesn't matter if it's Little League, high school, college, professional, whatever. You never walk out on your team.
Mm.
These are your brothers or your sisters, and you're going to war. And then you just quit.
You just quit. Let's go to Edmund from Pikesville. Edmund, talk to me. What's your take?
What's happening, Faraji? I'm actually in Elkridge.
Oh, Elkridge. Yes, sir.
Yeah, your panelists, man. Brother, you got to be more sensitive to this man. I think, you know, he saved a whole lot of people by not going back out there in the second half. I played a little football, Division III. I played semi-pro for 11 years, and I played flag football for 18. So, not in comparison, but you know.
No, but I mean, you got
the same level,
and,
but
right?
I can speak to, and I played until I was 42. I'm 50 now, but I can speak to how you feel in different situations, and when that end is coming, and you realize the end is coming, either you physically can't do it anymore, or you know your body can't take it anymore. I applaud him, man, because think he saved a lot of his teammates. He could have been out there and somebody could have got injured. Obviously, he contemplated retirement
you know,
for some time that he came to this decision. But, I mean, yo, I know we've all been in situations, jobs, girlfriends, relationships.
Said,
right now. can't, yo, brother, when something, when a relationship or a job is over, it's just got to end.
You just walk out on a date, huh, Edmund?
Yeah, no question. But I'm
like, you know what? I'm done. You pay for the steak. I'm done.
Farazi, on the real, I think we don't need to make light of it. And
no.
I spoke to you before. We were talking about mental illness when we were talking about brothers killing each other.
Yep.
And here it is again, showing his head in a different form of a professional athlete. And my man on the panel, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, bro.
Dre.
But you're equating money. You're equating his how much money he making to him being able to perform. His contract stated that as long as he made the roster, he was guaranteed his $5 million. So maybe he did have it planned that he was going to retire at halftime, or his intent was to play the whole season. And he was like, you know what? I just can't take it no more. I played for so many different coaches. And, you know, when the culture ain't right, so my man just called me and he was like, yo, is it player first, then teammate, then coach? I said, yeah, absolutely. If I'm a player, I got to be in my right mind first before I can play for my brother next to me.
Then
the coach just provides that, you know, the formations and the coaching and the strategy of the game. But if you got a soldier that ain't right, you don't want him out there with you?
No, sir, you don't. You definitely, Edmund, you don't.
I'm sorry, Farage. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, and I got to let you go, but you're absolutely right. You want a man in his right mind that's going to be next to you. Otherwise, he can get everybody hurt. My man, Olubasola Amun, checked in on our Facebook page and said, what would we be saying if this young man died on the field? We have no idea the pain they feel. Oh, that's very true. And Sharon checked in and said, mentally, when you've had enough, you've had enough. That's what it is. That's what it is. Regardless of how much money. Let me tell you something. We're not quitting on WEAA. When you had enough, no, let me stop playing. But Byron Nixon, I appreciate you for checking in. Dre Day, what can we learn from this? What's the...
Hey, look, let me just say this. My father coached football, ladies and gentlemen, so that's the mentality that I'm coming from. You just don't do that. But let me throw this real quickly out there. The Flex Zone Podcast, we're coming up on episode 200. So yeah. YouTube, type in the Flex Zone Podcast. Make sure you subscribe every Monday and Friday. We have new episodes for y'all.
That's what I'm talking about. Thank you both for being on the program. We truly appreciate it. And thank you for staying for the whole show. Thank you for staying for the whole show. Byron, thank you for being on for the whole show, sir. I didn't want you to stop in the middle of the conversation.
Appreciate it, Farazi.
Absolutely.
See you down the road.
Absolutely. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us. I want to thank all of you for being a part of the conversation. I want to thank my fantastic production team, Miss Mallory Pinker-Pierre, Alex Blanc, my production assistants, Jalen and Daryl. And, of course, my engineer, Dre Day, for making me sound so good. Make sure you continue the conversation on social media at ForTheCulture889 on Facebook and Instagram. Also, shoot us an email with your suggestions and feedback at ForTheCulture889@gmail.com. Also, like us on our page, ForTheCulture889 on Facebook. And if you have missed any show that we've done here on For The Culture, you can go to WEAA.org to download all the latest podcasts. Up next is In The Groove with LaDon Black, giving you that cool jazz for your evening. As always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I look forward to having another great conversation with you tomorrow right here on For The Culture, here on your source for cool jazz and more at WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. And remember, Baltimore, do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Peace.